ready?
Yes.
Good. Yes. Oral history interview on the 11th of July 2013 with Elizabeth Wells and
John Corsellis.
Right. The first question I wanted to ask you was for you to say a little bit about your background, about where you were born, yes, and when, certainly, and your parents.
Yes, certainly. My father was a successful barrister who served in World War One. Was wounded fairly severely at Gallipoli, lost a forearm, as was usual in World War One, was patched up, but then joined the machine gun corps and became an instructor there, and invented a gadget, which was a few years before the invention of computers, a gadget to quickly calculate how to the trajectory for the machine gun operator, so that you hit the enemy and didn't hit your own side. Typically, of course, the British did little about it. So he was left having to distribute it himself. The Americans were rather more interested. Yeah. But after that, qualified as a lawyer, patent lawyer, keen semi-pioneer pilot, flew to have the Gypsy Moth to commute from, we had a flat in London for his legal work, and we had a house in Suffolk or Essex, two houses, and he used to fly from London to Essex for the weekends, and also flew on the continent to lawyers' conferences. Sadly, killed himself flying in, I think, 1930, so that my mother, from having been looking after, you know, a house with servants, he had not insured himself properly. His philosophy was that insurance companies are robbers, but it was rather irresponsible of him, having four young children. There was some family money, but only a modest amount, so we suddenly nosedived and became a part of the lower upper middle class. Two older sisters and a brother. Sisters went to Francis Holland School in London. We had some family connections, so my brother went to Winchester. We also had a kind of family connection with Westminster, and that's where I went. But yes, I think that's probably enough on the family background. If you want more, always can ask. But I think I'll probably think of other things in the meantime. Yeah. But I think that gives you the rough.
So where did you go to prep school?
Very good point. Yes, St Clair's, Warmer, near Dover, Kent. A school has been going since about the middle of the 19th century. You probably haven't heard of him, but the chap who was rather like the big spy stories after the war, he the same between the wars, a man called Dawn for Yeats. It was one of the boys there, but that's a minor point. But a minor prep school, about 40 boys, but well taught, good grounding in Latin and Greek, and prepared boys for a range of public schools. They encouraged me to try for Westminster. I was of a rather timid and nervous disposition, so very astutely the headmaster put me in for the challenge a year early, and I failed. But I still had another year to try again. Again I failed, but was clearly a good enough standard for admission to the school as a town boy and joined home boarders, now Wrens, I'm told. That's about all that's really relevant, I suppose. Oh no, for the prep school, shy and timid to an extent. At the same time, fairly strongly conformist, and I seem to manage to become a big fish in small pools. I ended up as head boy of the school, and there was an admirable system. The head boy had to read one of the lessons in chapel. So at the age of 10 or 11, or 12 perhaps it was, I was regularly reading the lesson, meaning, of course, a good training in public speaking, in pacing oneself. I would normally speak much too fast, but I learned to pace myself and to throw one's voice to the end of a largish school chapel. So it meant that one went from being, you know, and as head boy who had certain disciplinary authority and responsibilities, locking up the school at night and things like that, quite responsible, and so that I had the same experience as thousands of other schoolboys and girls, from being a big fish in your prep school, then becoming the lowest of the low and going to your public school. a very salutary experience.
So in September 1936, you joined Westminster as a home boarder.
Yes.
What were your first impressions of the school as a little fish in a big pond again?
I suppose two of my uncles had been at Westminster, so there was something of a tradition. And I think I was, and in a sense still am, quite a strong traditionalist. I was certainly in awe of the school. I experienced a little bullying in my early years at prep school. I don't remember suffering from any bullying at Westminster, which is, you know, nice to be able to report, because not everybody has said the same. In my memories, a friendly school, I was keen to be able to be proud of where I was. I was proud of my prep school, so I was naturally even prouder of being at Westminster School. When I started at Westminster, we were living at the northern end, just off the northern end of Baker Street, a street going all around there called either Park Street or Park Road, looking out to Regent's Park, and I used to walk every day, top hat, tailcoat, a rolled umbrella, through the parks to Westminster, and I suspect I was something of a little prig, and quite enjoyed the attention one got. I never suffered from anybody throwing stones at my top hat. I think some other Westminsters did. But then, before I joined college, the family home moved down to Brighton. So I think probably for a term, I commuted from Brighton to Westminster.
Goodness, on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, yes. Oh. Again, with top hat, tailcoat, and rolled umbrella. I think, yes. Oh, another memory of an arrival, very much so. I'd come from a prep school with a fairly vivid and painful memories of the sheer tedium of watching cricket matches and football matches. I was not a physical little boy. Again, as I say, timid, and didn't like getting into conflict with others if I could avoid it. The hours one spent, this is not entirely fair, a prep school, I suppose eventually, it was quite clear that I was hopeless, particularly ball games. I had a faulty coordination from eye to hand to ball, and so I became a scorer, because that was a very good idea. It meant that you went with the first 11 for away matches, and together with the team, you got the superior spreads provided for the two teams, and again you felt nice and important. I was a good scorer. I went to Westminster and was, I think, a bit fearful that I was going to be landed with further years of tedium on football and cricket, only to find that there was a way out. That was fencing, bliss of course. That was my, what tiny claim to fame I had at Westminster would have been with fencing. You know the four-line poems, the Clara Hughes?
No.
No, Clara Hughes, I think it was E. Bentley. I think you'll find, if you look at a dictionary of quotations, Clerihue. I think he was E. Clerihue Bentley. And it's like Edward Lear's The Limerick, a four-liner. And one appeared in one of the informal school mags. Corsellis rhymes with trellis, hence fence. which was it's really a bit, I mean, if you knew the context of Westminster, was a pretty brilliant clerio. You've already got that recorded. E. Clerihew Bentley. And there have been some very good ones, very much on the lines of the Edward Lear.
Where did you do the fencing?
Very good point. when the weather was fine, in little Dean's yard, quite often. but it wasn't in the armoury,
yes.
Which was in little cloisters, off little cloisters.
Yes.
We fenced over the graves of the monks. It was the there was the monks' infirmary, and those that didn't survive the infirmary were buried there. And then there was the gym, a pretty old-fashioned one, a fair standard gym, and we'd fence indoors when the weather was bad, and also there was a small garden, probably still is, attached to the armoury. I can't remember quite how you get there, but I think there's an abbey wall or a monastic wall which was a background and green in my day.
I think we call that Ashburnham Garden now.
Long and narrow strip?
Yes, I think
probably. If we had time, we can go and see.
Yes.
I'd like to eventually see where they are. I'm very happy to. Fencing, of course, being London, we had quite a distinguished French maître d'armes at the time. He may have gone by the time I'd got there. I may have had him for my first year or so. But anyhow, we always had one or more good instructors. It was, of course, before the age really of electric fencing. You didn't have to be wired up as you are now. Although I think it was already introduced for major tournaments, but certainly not a school fencing. And but fencing had the enormous advantage that you didn't have to do football or cricket station at all, and I never watch boring matches normally. Still less did you have to go and do the heartiness of water, which must have been, I think, my idea of absolute hell. There we were, again, my great good fortune, I happen to be a left-hander. Well, I'm left-hander for some things, right-hand for others. Right and right hand, and by bad luck, probably I'm naturally left handed, but of course was in my day made to write right hand. No nonsense about pandering for such idiosyncrasies. I was left hander, and for 95% of that time, fencing is a matter of right-handers fighting right-handers. Mm. Therefore, if a right-hander is confronted with a left-hander, he is quite appreciably disorientated. It gives the left-hander a major advantage. I also, in those days, was about as thin as a rake. That also was very helpful too. I didn't provide much of a target to the enemy. So I went from success to success. Colt's team, then the school team, and glory of glories, public school championship, number one in foils, number two in epee. It wasn't a bad go at all. So that, and it even gave me, I suppose, some small, very small, esteem in the school. At least I was good at something. Also, very vivid memory of, I imagine, towards the beginning of the first term, all the new intake congregated in yard and were addressed by the master in charge of corps, and who gave a rousing patriotic spiel on the attractions and virtues of corps. It makes a man of you, and yes, there were also alternatives. You could the scouts. I'm not sure whether you could be out as soon as you arrived, or you may have had to done a year something else first. The scouts, or I think the only other alternative was gym. There were special gym lessons for the boys who, for whatever reason, didn't want to do corps or scouts. There may have been another alternative, another choice rather, can't be alternative, another choice. I suspect that this was partly on the influence of my brother. We were both mildly disrespectful to authority and the establishment, and I think he may have had to do corps at Winchester, and may have advised me, get out of it as you can. It's a hell of a bore. I was something of a non-joiner, I think the scouts had rather a reputation for heartiness, and I think I was already sophisticated enough not for this to find this of limited attraction, so I of course opted for gym, which was allowed, and which was quite funny in fact, learning to vault and parallel bars and things. I will remember the recruiting talk, because I mean, this was very understandable. We were all already fully conscious of, I mean, when we, at prep school, we were watching, you know, looking at a map of Abyssinia following the Italians' invasion of Abyssinia, so that war was very much in our minds then. I think even then I probably had, I think almost from the start, or perhaps even from the start, a fairly strong pacifist tendencies. I imagine helped by the fact that I had an aunt who was a militant pacifist, who my aunt was the blood relation, and her husband was one of my godparents, so that it was a stronger link than any old aunt, so that I probably had the idea from there, and she would have been a very good role model. A courageous and remarkable lady, and my godfather. I mean, she was the Muslim pacifist, but he was also a very pacific man, and they were very kind to me. I used to stay with them, and it was a lovely house in the country. Maybe, you know, anyhow, certainly, I became increasingly involved. Become convinced as a pacifist, very much on the line. In my day, Westminster was arguably fairly strongly evangelical in the wider sense, not in the clannish sense, but John Christie, headmaster, a really striking preacher. Certainly struck me, all right. And there was a form master who taught classics, who I think was himself a pacifist. I think I came across him. Once, like he had to leave school when the war started. I think my memory is that it was indicated to him that his presence was not really very desirable once the war started. You know, letting the side down, which is not characteristic of Westminster, which is a very tolerant school, and of course tolerated masters who were notorious rebels like John Bowle, distinguished historian, so that they were used to having to cope with rebellion, but there must have been also quite a strong atmosphere. I mean, there must be other boys who also were pacifists. I'm sure I was by no means the lone one. In fact, three of my contemporaries, all from college, all sooner or later joined the Friends Ambulance Unit specifically. And I mentioned that some amount of smugness in a footnote in the book. I managed to work it in. I was rather pleased with myself for doing so an unobtrusive but relevant way. My contemporaries who also were pacifists were William Barnes, who was about two or three elections above me, and is the name familiar to you or not?
Yeah,
good. Yes, good. I'm glad. Son of the great Bishop Barnes, who was a very kind of a non-conformist bishop. If you can be a non-conformist bishop, he can certainly manage it. Like the honest to God one in more recent times. I think he questioned the whole concept of a personal God. This was fairly revolutionary.
Yes.
he wasn't notorious. Bishop Barnes, I think, Bishop Birmingham. Anyhow, William Barnes was had, because his nickname, of course, was Bishop. Poor man. Strong personality, forceful. I think liked him. I certainly liked him and respected him. I think he became head boy, head of college, and at the same time head boy of the school. A natural scholar. It all came easy to him, and a strong presence. I wasn't aware he was a pacifist at the time at all. You know, I only discovered it when he kind of turned up in the FAU. In fact, then a second one was Norman John Pepin Brown, who was almost an exact contemporary. I think he was either the same election or election higher than me. He ended up as a professor of philosophy in Canada. Canada because he was also, I think, already at Westminster, I think, a Catholic. And of course, Catholic philosophers are not that popular academically in this country, so I think his career prospects were not very good here. I think he did perfectly well in Canada. He was another of the non-sporting types, and a bit of a butt for humour, but a nice lad, and he did. And the fourth was a much more spectacular catch. It was Donald Swan of Flanders and Swan. I knew him fairly well. We were the same election, or he may have been election above me, but we were virtual contemporaries. Delightful chap, as you know, very musical, of course. I knew him quite well in college, and then he went up to Oxford. When I left Westminster and entered into articles, with a lawyer in Oxford, so that I was learning law the hard way as an apprentice, as you could do in those days. Mm-hmm. You didn't need a degree at all. You had to do you don't mind this wandering around.
No, not
it's quite good, Graham. It fits him well. In my day, you were an unpaid, you paid for the privilege of being a trainee in a lawyer's firm, becoming an article clerk to the lawyer. You had to do like 1 year or maybe 2 years of part-time lectures at the university, and for me it was fascinating because I got to attend the lectures of Professor G.C. Cheshire, who was a great authority on land law and private international law, and the father of the Cheshire V.C., the founder of the Cheshire Homes. But he himself was a moment. But while I was doing my article clerk with the lawyers in Oxford, Donald was at the house as an undergrad, and we used to meet up, I think sometimes in the British restaurant, where you could get fairly awful meals, quite cheap, very cheaply. And sometimes, I think we took our own sandwich lunches, and in a rather earnest, Westminster-like way, we'd kind of do the college gardens. One day, we'd do Magdalen and the Deer Park. I suspect that he found me quite welcome as something a bit slightly more earthy and less ethereal than his undergraduate contemporaries there. I got to know his father fairly well, most interesting man. The father, I don't, whether he actually was born in Russia, I don't know. I think he was, and yes, I think he was there, and I think as a doctor until the revolution, and then escaped, having married a Georgian or one of the similar national minorities, as it was Donald's mother. So that Donald was Donald Ibrahim Swan. The Ibrahim, clearly, because my mother was a Muslim there. And I got to know him quite well, and he was a quite delightful man who wrote his memoirs, which I read. He very generously let me read them, and I strongly urged that they should be published. They were important enough and really important. It's a human document. Nothing happened. And then about some years later, I found out, indirectly and quite by chance, that they had been published. But no one had thought to tell me. I was rather miffed about, but there we are. I certainly have never given a copy, and I don't even able to obtain a copy, in fact. It would have been a very good read. But anyhow, then during our chats, must have been just discussing what we do when we get our call-up papers, and he shared with me that he was a pacifist too. I may have learned this already, probably, in fact, when we were both in college. He just didn't know what to do. And so I said, well, I'm in touch with this quite fairly remarkable relation, the Friends Ambulance Unit. I'd, as usual, done my own kind of earnest research on this, got a book, I think, by Ruth Fry, the great Quaker Fry's, on relief work during World War I. And anyhow, encouraged him, and he decided he'd also apply for the FAU. And in fact, we were in the same camp. You did about 6 weeks of training in a camp in Birmingham, part of the Cadbury estate. It was a small farm. I imagine. No, it was not that. I mean, it was not on the edge. It can't be. It wasn't in central Birmingham. But anyhow, the farm. They converted the stables or the quarters for the cattle for us, which was most appropriate to toughen up these rather soft and effete middle class young idealists there. And to my delight, we were both sent after six weeks of training of a fairly wide variety and well organized. We then were allocated to what was known as a training hospital. And we were both sent to a guy's hospital, had a sector hospital in Orpington. It was it had been a Canadian military hospital in World War I, and so had apartments, and then between the wars had been used as a geriatrics hospital, where the old and infirm were left to end their days under fairly rather grim conditions. This was then converted into a sector hospital because it was assumed that London would be raided, and so they want to remove as many people, patients as possible, out of London, somewhere within reach. We were both sent there. Donald Swan, a man called Bill Mann, who was, I think, a Wickhamist, and who ended up as the musical critic of the Times. And in fact, was a very popular man, very scholarly and good musician, and a chap called Douglas Harvey, but delightful, eccentric. We were all fairly eccentric in our ways, if we were there. But anyhow, at Orpington, one of our main things was we were hospital porters who also were used as ward orderlies.
Draw it to a close, I'm afraid.
So, of course.
Yes.
As well.
I hope we can, yeah.